Good morning. Again, I'm David Faust, the Director of Communications at APHA, and I'm delighted to be part of this panel, and I realize I'm the last speaker standing between you and the Supreme Court decision. No reason to rush out of the room, though. You've heard some terrific insights from our Health 2.0 leaders here this morning, and I'm really pleased to be a part of it, about how these emerging communications technologies really are transforming the way we communicate with our audiences and the way we conduct and practice public health and deliver public health services. So I wanted to share with you this morning a few of APHA's experiences in using social media. And in planning this session, we tried to get a range of perspectives and a range of experiences as much as we can with four slots on the panel. So APHA comes to it with a little bit different take than I think each of the other presenters have. For starters, APHA is not a federal agency. We're not, and I suspect some of our experience may be relatable to you as well. We don't have deep financial resources or human resources or technical resources. We are a lean organization. There are about 80 staff people at APHA. So if you're at a state local health department or another local nonprofit state agency, our experience may speak to you in some of those ways that some of the other presenters may not have been able to. We also don't outsource our work. We do it all internally. We've not added new staff to do the social media work. It's not supported by any outside funding. So this is all with existing staffing and resources. And in our current paradigm that we all face, that doing more with less, I'm sure a lot of this rings true with you, new media technologies may offer some profound ways to transform or support the ongoing work of your public health activities. We're also different in a way that we're not the ones conducting the public health interventions. We're not doing the surveillance at APHA. You all are. Our members, APHA members are. Our partners are. So our approach as a professional organization is really to look at social media as a way to support the broader network of public health professionals and the public health enterprise and the practice of public health. So given that as a setting, let me tell you just a little bit of the story of our story and perhaps a better place to start than at the very beginning with our founder, Dr. Stephen Smith. Dr. Smith was a pioneer, a physician and a pioneer in sanitary reforms in New York City, taking on typhus and smallpox and a host of other threats. And he organized the first Board of Health in New York City, and in 1872 founded APHA, and he was APHA's first president. So I'm sure this milestone is on all of your calendars. It is. Happy birthday, APHA. It's 140 years. But much like the reforms that Dr. Smith ushered in during that time of momentous change in public health, Web 2.0 technologies, I think, offer a lot of those same transforming and transformative powers about how public health agencies are conducting our business today. So I won't go through, in the essence of time, these are a lot of the stats that others have already talked about, the massive growth in Web 2.0 technologies and real-time messaging and digital interface, and they have enormous implications for the way we conduct our work and for public health. So we started our work back in social media in 2006. So we started our Get Ready campaign, which is APHA's All Hazards Preparedness Initiative. And to support the campaign, we started a blog. Why not? We didn't quite know what we were getting ourselves into, but we went ahead and started a blog to support the messaging of the campaign and to help reach other people, let them know the importance of public health preparedness. And this was all around the time when concerns around H5N1, avian influenza, and pandemic flu concerns were growing. So we launched the blog, and we posted once a week on a variety of newsy topics, and we had some guest posts and things. We attracted some readers, not a lot, but what we found is that by the fact that we had this blog, Dr. George Benjamin, and APHA's executive director, was invited by then HHS Secretary Michael Levitt to participate in this pandemic flu blog summit. And the summit was intended to bring national leaders together around in a conversation about the potential of a pandemic and the importance of public health preparedness. So early on, we saw that it wasn't just about getting click-throughs and eyeballs on our content. That's important and reach, but it also being in that space, in the social media space, opened up opportunities for us that we wouldn't have been able to be a part of without being in social media. So there's a kind of that side benefit. From the Get Ready campaign, the next year we launched an annual meeting blog. So for each of the annual meetings for the last 5 or 6 years, and the mid-year meeting as well, we've been blogging the meetings. So rather than having one of those old sticky daily convention newspapers, if those of you have been around for a while to those old conventions, this is now real time. You can get it mobily, you can follow the blog, you can comment, so it's a dynamic interface that people can share insights, lessons learned during the course of the meeting. So if you haven't visited the mid-year meeting blog, please do so. Check it out. If not today, then on your way home or once you get back home, go to the APHA's website, APHA.org, and you'll find a click through a button to get you to the mid-year meeting blog. So from that, we adopted a number of different tools. So you can see we're on a range of things, just like our partners here, we're kind of adopting things. We're new to Google Plus and Pinterest, so we're just getting our feet wet and learning how that might be of value and benefit to us. Facebook, we have several blogs, we have 5 or 6 Twitter feeds, not nearly as many as CDC, but we have a number of different all hazard preparedness and around National Public Health Week and the Nation's Health newspaper and the broader at Public Health APHA's primary Twitter handle, YouTube and Facebook and Flickr and Foursquare. So we've jumped in to using the technologies. But it's grown rapidly and evolving, and we are still, I think, like a lot of our partners, are still learning how best to use the technology to our advantage. You see some of the growth here demonstrated by this. This is the use of the APHA annual meeting Twitter hashtag during the annual meeting over the last 3 years, and you see 2011 there were 6,050 tweets using the APHA annual meeting hashtag. I think what's interesting here that, the graph reflects that people working in public health are not being left out. As the growth of social media across has grown across all the different channels, public health folks are also growing in their use of the tool. It's interesting to note in 2011 with the 6,050 tweets, that came from about 1,800 Twitterers, different Twitter handles. 59% of tweeters posted only once. And but we also had a core of about 10 individuals, power tweeters, who accounted for about 15% of all tweets. It's about 900 tweets from 10 individuals. So there are some who are really, really embracing the technology. And this is a look at the trends of fans, followers, and friends over our three primary social media channels at APHA, our at Public Health Twitter, APHA Facebook, and APHA LinkedIn. And what's interesting, if you look at March 2010, the very, very first in the bottom left-hand corner, there's not much space separating those three. And, it's a few thousand, somewhere between, 5,000 and 10,000 followers and fans of the different channels. And then you see the just explosive growth for Twitter, which we're delighted with, but we're excited about the growth in the other channels as well, but Twitter's really taken off. And so a few things we attribute that Twitter growth to is just the Twitter handle. So we were the first ones on the block to register at Public Health, which is fortunate. When we registered it, we weren't exactly sure what we were going to do with it. We have some early adopters on staff. Michelle Light, who I want to give full credit to, who's the executive editor of the Nation's Health newspaper, is the woman behind the at Public Health Twitter feed for us. And so she registered the handle, and it sat silent for about 6 months before she sent out her first tweet. So that's having at Public Health has been one of the primary drivers. Twitter use itself has grown. So since 2010, the proportion of online adults using Twitter has quadrupled. 15% of online adults use Twitter. 8% are using it every day. Tweeting credible, timely content is critical. Michelle she's a newspaper journalist. She's a newswoman. She knows what's news and what's happening. She's on the pulse of what's going on. So if you follow at Public Health, you're going to find out what's happening in the field of public health very quickly. It's a great resource. We also tweet more frequently. So Michelle and others who are using the handle used to tweet once, a few times a week, and now it's 5 to 8 times a day, depending upon what's going on. It could be more. It could be less. And then recognition has also been an important part of our of why we've seen some of that growth. Last year, Time Magazine selected APHA's at Public Health Twitter as one of the top 140 Twitter feeds to follow, which we were delighted and surprised with. We joined the ranks of Lady Gaga and Kanye West and Conan O'Brien. I don't know if anybody ever think you'd hear APHA listed in the same sentence as those three individuals. It's So we're also joined with other peers in the health and science community on that same list. I think the New York Academy of Sciences was selected as one of the top 140 to follow. APHA member and food nutrition expert Marion Nessel was one in her Twitter feed. The Lancet, National Science Foundation. So some of the, you know, the recognition is nice and makes us feel good, but it also, it helps boost our stock. I think it's the recognition accolades are harder to quantify, but we definitely see an increase or an uptick in our followers following that. So among those three tools, we have over 200,000 followers on those three primary APHA social media tools. We wanted to find out more about them. There's some anecdotal evidence based on the comments and some of the email addresses or handles that we could follow, but we wanted to find out more. So we did a survey in mid-2011, promoted the survey across the links across our social media channels, and then compared it to some benchmarking data from Pew Internet Survey. I won't go through some of the things. These are just a few of the findings that we've, trying to figure out who do our followers look like. These are some of the demographic questions. One of the key things, I think, they're predominantly non-APHA members. We have 25,000 APHA members who are getting the Nation's Health, who are getting the American Journal of Public Health, who may visit the APHA website. You're reaching 200,000 plus followers, it's about 10 times more that we're reaching in social media. So we know they're, by that very nature, that they're more non-members who are reaching through our social media work. So some of the demographic questions you see here, we ask questions about why they follow us, did they take any actions based on our messages? So it helps give us a better idea of who we're communicating with and what kind of content they're expecting. So as we've grown and adopting social media, we launched, Jay mentioned, Public Health Newswire. So we launched Public Health Newswire last summer. If you haven't visited it, please do subscribe, sign up via email or the RSS feed, publichealthnewswire.org. It's a new news blog from APHA. It's allowing us to aggregate some of the public health news that's out there. So we're covering news and reports that are released from our partners. We're talking about studies published in the American Journal of Public Health. We do a daily public health news lines roundup every day. So if you subscribe, you'll get it in your inbox each morning at 11 o'clock. You'll see sort of our take on significant public health news stories that are going on around the country and appearing in other news and media outlets. So it gives us, this has allowed us to provide a platform to share content across our other social media. It's kind of an engine of content for us. So when we tweet, we can link back to a Public Health Newswire post. We link to other things as well, obviously, but this is something that we can kind of own as APHA and give our own perspective on things and share via our social media tools. So going back several years, and when we first started, soon after we started, we realized we needed to articulate our goals for using these new tools and operationalize their use organization-wide. So you see kind of our goals as we sketch them out, raising visibility and credibility, revitalizing the APHA brand and public health brand, to be honest with you, engage and connect with our members and followers, advocate, educate, and inform, advance our mission for improving public health and establishing greater recognition of the value of public health in society. So as we've established some of those goals, we also set up some guidelines, and Jessica pointed to some great resources that CDC has as well. These are some of our guidelines contain sort of a purpose and goals, organization of how we operationalize social media use within APHA, how we treat content, how we write about it, our style and tone, and then principles of use, which are simple things like use common sense. It's sort of guidelines for APHA staff using social media. So using common sense, no profanity, no libel, defamation, obey copyright rules, respect privacy. So they're maintain professionalism and credibility. These are some guidelines for staff in using social media tools that also offer the association some protection. So making sure staff adhere to our guidelines. Some of the resources, Jessica mentioned CDC's terrific resources. There are a couple of others. Socialmediagovernance.com has a range of, I think, a database of over 200 different social media policies across different industries. So if you're looking for guidelines to help govern your use, check some of these resources out. Again, CDC's Gateway has terrific resources about how to, again, write for social media and how to organize and operationalize your work and how to gain the most eyeballs. Looking to sort of comparing your work against others is very helpful. It's kind of a benchmark. So there's not, as Jay mentioned, there's not a whole lot of research out there around public health adoption of social media, and I'm just pointing to a couple of recent ones that I'm aware of. National Public Health Health Information Coalition in the spring did a survey of their members. A majority of state health departments and local health departments are now on Facebook. Most state health departments are on Twitter. They mentioned a majority of local health departments are not on Twitter yet for reasons they did not go into. But it also showed an increase from, they did a survey 6 months earlier, which showed this shows an increase of social media adoption across the state and local health departments. And then Rose Thackeray at BYU did a survey that was published early this spring as well. The numbers track very similarly to NIFIC's survey about state among state health departments, their adoption of social media. You see 60% of state health departments use at least one social media tool. The Twitter's obviously the most popular one, followed by Facebook and YouTube. When they then did a kind of a content analysis of what how state departments were, health departments were using social media, it shows that they're, yes, they're adopting, but it's not their use of it is not terribly compelling. So on average, state health departments made one post per day. Mostly it's a one-way communications channel. There's very little interaction, listening going on. State health departments have few followers or friends, but don't take it personally. And you see some of the comments here as well. If you're curious about following who's on among health departments, who's on Twitter, we've got a list on the @PublicHealth Twitter feed of health departments. I think there are over about 200 or more health departments. You can follow follow them from the @PublicHealth Twitter feed and find that list there. Thank you. And then just general lessons from APHA. These are my reflections. Just do it. We just kind of jumped in and we figured out how to swim after we got in the water. And I think that still continues to be our model. Fortunately, we've had very broad support from our leadership, Dr. Jordis Benjamin, our executive director, and Susan Poland at APHA, who have been very supportive of our work in social media and letting us just be creative and innovative and try it. We had identifying early adopters on staff, looking for people who are a little tech savvy. Sometimes they're the younger members of your staff, and sometimes not. You find support in different places. Post incredible, timely content. You want to add value to your followers' lives. Curating content. Don't necessarily recreate the wheel, but look for stuff that's already exists and supports your messaging and use that content to push out through your tools. Being interactive. Listening, engaging, approving comments, monitoring the tools once your people are posting. Establishing guidelines were really helpful for us, so use some of those tools to help establish the rules for your organization and allow nimble and staffing and just setting them free, letting people experiment and try it out. And then just going one last slide, looking at the broader theme for this meeting of rewiring public health. And looking at social media and Web 2.0 new media technology as ways to really transform the work of social media, of public health. We mentioned it's budget neutral. It is budget neutral. Facebook doesn't cost anything, but there is staffing. There are definitely staffing implications depending upon how robust your engagement is on that tool. It helps allows to promote transparency across your organization and with your followers. You're able to reach new audiences. It raises your visibility, it revitalizes your brand and the brand of public health, and again, establishes greater recognition of the value of public health. And with that, I thank you.